Welcome to the Todd Starn Show, sponsored by Legacy Precious Metals. There's never been a better time to invest in precious metals. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to the Todd Starnes Show. I hope you're having a great day so far. I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Todd. Now, just a little bit of programming news from Todd. During the show on Thursday, Todd started to not feel so great, and it turned out that he was suffering from a serious illness, and it did require hospitalization not related to his heart condition. And he's getting great treatment. The doctors say he's going to make a full recovery, and he could be back as soon as next week. So just in a couple of days, he is still at the hospital. He appreciates your prayers. And rumor has it, we may hear from Todd during the show. So I will keep you posted, hopefully, you know, if he's feeling up to, he's supposedly feeling great and much better. And hopefully he will give us a call during the show. Okay. Coming up next hour, we're going to be joined by Scott Couch from WZTV Fox 17 here in Nashville, and we'll talk about the updates on the shooting. And Gail Trotter will be joining us as well. She is an attorney, and she's author of Right in the World. We'll speak with her about the Nashville shooting and also what's happening with some of the January 6th defendants and what is coming out now that video is finally being released and how that could be changing a lot of things. So we have a lot. There's just so much to get to today. You know, I love when you call in. I'd love to get in a conversation with you. So let me throw the number out, 844-747-8868. 844-747-8868 is the number. You can follow me on Twitter at Mary Walter Radio. And also on Tuesdays and Thursdays, I have a podcast. Yesterday's podcast, if you want to check it out, was so much fun. I just go to YouTube and look for Mary Walter Radio. And the first podcast you'll see there is with Sean Spicer. And you may have to click streams or live. Yeah, it's home comes up live, but you have to click around. You'll find it. Sean Spicer, and we did a non-political interview. It was really a lot of fun. Got to ask Sean some fun questions. You can find out whether Sean was popular in high school. just some fun. It was fun. It was a different look at people. And I'm going to do more of these about from people who are behind the microphone, pundits, maybe politicians, and talk about everything but what they do for a living. You know, find out more about what they're like as people, because, you know, pundits are people too. So you can go there. Also, the audio will be loaded up on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. As soon as I get off here, I will upload the audio. There you have to search for Life with Mary Walter. You have to be specific because for whatever reason, doesn't come up just yet. So that is that. Tomorrow night is the political podcast, 7:15 p.m. Eastern Time, YouTube and Getter. It will be live and you can join in. Love to have you. Let's do a little housekeeping, shall we? Let's do a little, wait a minute, let me just get that. Okay. I want to talk about some other things that are in the news besides the shooting, besides those things, and get into that, because we're going to talk about that a lot next hour. So there is some news coming out of New York, out of Manhattan. NBC4 there in New York is reporting that Trump will not be charged, will not get an indictment vote this week. There won't even be a vote this week. The jury is not even expected to do that. They reconvene tomorrow. 23 members. They reconvene tomorrow, and they are expected to address matters other than Trump and Stormy Daniels. So that gets it put off by yet another week. Now, 2 days ago, On Monday, the grand jury heard from the CEO, the former CEO of America Media, and which is the publisher of the National Enquirer. They got dragged into this whole thing. His name is David Pecker. And it was his second appearance before the grand jury. Nobody knows why he had to come back twice. They're thinking the theory is that his testimony could corroborate what Michael Cohen claimed about the hush money payments, that they weren't just personal, they were political. For that catch and kill story, happens all the time. Somebody famous finds out that someone's going to sell their story to like the National Enquirer or something along those lines. And so they say, hey, buy the story, don't publish it. It's a catch and kill. In 2018, American Media admitted to paying $150,000 in hush money to Karen McDougal. She was a Playboy model, and Stormy Daniels. And a statement of what they call admitted facts said that America Media Inc.'s principal purpose in making the payment was to suppress the woman's stories so as to prevent it from influencing the election. And that's all well and good. Federal prosecutors investigated, though, and they said the payments amounted to illegal, unreported assistance to Trump's campaign, but they declined to charge Trump himself. And he's denied all knowledge of any of this. And Michael Cohen testified that Trump knew nothing about it. So, Michael Cohen, how do you know when he's telling the truth? And that probably the reason that David Pecker was brought back was probably because of the testimony from Cohen's attorney, Bob. It also starts with a C, so I get him confused. But he was the bombshell testimony. Bob Costello, got it. Oh, thank you. My brain isn't totally shot yet. You ever do that? You forget something and you know it, and you hang on the precipice hoping that you can remember. And if you don't remember, you're like, you chalk it up to age. And then when you do, you're like, ah, Bob Costello. He testified last week, I think it was, and he said that, you know, Michael Cohen's a liar. He said, Michael Cohen told me, I was his lawyer, told me that he did this without Trump's knowledge. So there is that. Remember the name John Durham? Remember John Durham, that guy? Yeah, he's still apparently still investigating. Now, I would like credit because I said all along, I have been saying 4 years publicly on the radio, nothing was going to come of the Durham investigation. It was going to take forever and nobody big is going to get charged. Nobody's going to be walking in handcuffs. You're not going to see anyone big get charged with anything. The only person who did anything, served any kind of punishment, was Kevin Kleinsmith. He was found guilty. He was charged in, he was indicted in August of 2020, and he pleaded not guilty. And he wound up serving community time. He's a lawyer. He's the one who he pled not guilty, but he was accused of lying on the FISA court applications, right? And doctoring the evidence on there in order to get the warrant to spy on Carter Page, which is a big deal, especially if you're a lawyer. They didn't even revoke his privileges. He was allowed to keep his privileges. Nothing's going to happen to these people. Nothing. Danchenko and former Clinton attorney Michael Sussman. Because their trials were in very friendly Democrat strongholds, nothing happened. Not found guilty. That's the way it is now. If you're a Republican, like if you're like one of the January 6th defendants, you're guilty as soon as you sit down in the chair. They already know before you walk in the door that you're guilty. The jury does. So that's it. But if that was being tried in like Wyoming, it might be a different outcome. So it's really sad what's happening. We're going to talk to Gail Trotter in about an hour and 15 minutes or so about this and what's happening with the January 6th footage and how that's changing some of those things. But anyway, so the reason his name came up was Attorney General Merrick Garland yesterday was at a hearing before the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Commerce, Justice, Science, and Related Agencies. They were talking about the Justice Department's budget for fiscal year 2024. And he was asked about Durham's investigation because, you know, are you still funding the investigation? Anybody know? Anybody heard from John Durham? What's going on? And Garland said that answers could come soon. He said, I think we're going to have to wait until Mr. Durham finishes his report. Should be relatively soon because there were questions that were asked about Michael Sussman during that hearing. So, John Durham, I can't say I had high hopes for you. I think I was the one person who didn't have high hopes. I think I was the one person who was like, yeah, it's not going anywhere. And I would rather be pleasantly surprised if, like, a big fish really did go to jail, really was punished for what they did, as opposed to being let off the hook. Like, I'd love to be pleasantly surprised by that. I don't like to be horribly disappointed when I really, really think that's going to happen and then it never does. So I'm definitely a glass half empty kind of girl, because I would rather be pleasantly surprised than horribly disappointed. You don't get your hopes up. You're never disappointed. You're like, if you expect the worst, you're prepared for it. And then if the best happens, you're like, oh, this is the best day ever. So keep my expectations low. Did you hear this? Matt Taibbi, he was one of the journalists who testified. He got the Twitter files. He was one of the journalists who got the Twitter files, along with Barry Weiss, Michael Schellenberger. And they were given to him by Elon Musk and said, here, these are the emails. Go through this. See what you find. We're going to put it out there. Be totally transparent. And Elon Musk didn't do it in-house. Gave it to these journalists. And the left got all mad and lost their minds and everything. So he was, along with Michael Schellenberger, testified about the Twitter files. Jim Jordan brought them in front of Congress on March 9th to testify about the Twitter files and what they found. And the Democrats didn't like what they found because they kept insulting them and calling them so-called journalists. And they were really mean and snarky. So you know you're over the target when they're criticizing you personally, right? Well, apparently, while he was testifying on March 9th, the IRS went to his house, and they knew where he was. He was in front of the House Weaponization Subcommittee, and they left a note by an IRS agent to call the IRS. And when he called, the IRS told him that his 2018 and 2021 tax returns were rejected because of identity theft concerns. Now, they're talking about the weaponization of the government. They're testifying about emails that show that the government contacted Twitter, a private entity, because the government cannot legally silence your free speech, right? But so instead, the emails show that they go through a private entity to silence your free speech. You're not allowed to do that. So what does the government think is a really good idea? Well, let's send an IRS agent to his house. That's the ultimate in intimidation, right? The IRS can ruin you. The FBI couldn't get Al Capone, but the IRS did. Why do you think Democrats were so hot for Donald Trump's tax returns? By the way, when none of his tax returns were leaked, you knew he was squeaky clean. Never indicted. Nothing came. That story died. So they send the IRS to one of the witnesses' homes who's going to testify about the weaponization of the government. How stupid can they possibly be? It was like case in point. Here's my Ring doorbell camera. So now Jim Jordan, who's chair of the House Judiciary Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government, wrote a letter to the IRS commissioner and the Treasury Secretary demanding answers about why an agent was sent to his home when they probably just could have given him a call or sent him a letter. When the IRS tells me I've underpaid, they don't send an agent to my home so that I don't accrue a lot of penalties, right? You know, because the time, the longer it takes, they accrue every single day. They don't do that. No, they send me a letter by regular mail. And if I don't get the letter, oh, well, too bad, we sent it. But they send an agent for this? I'm not buying it. Not buying it at all. Schellenberger tweeted, while Matt Taibbi and I were testifying before Congress on the weaponization of the federal government, an IRS agent showed up at his house. What an amazing coincidence. Unbelievable. If you want to jump in, 844-747-8868. Got some more news to share with you, because a lot of this, again, is kind of being put on the back burner because of what happened with the shooting on Monday. So we're going to get to that, more of that. I'm Mary Walter, and you're listening to The Todd Stern Show.
Legacy Precious Metals has a revolutionary new online platform that allows you to invest in real gold and silver online. Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and in just a few easy steps, you can open an account online, select your metals of choice, and choose to have them stored in a vault or ship to your door. You'll have access to a dashboard where you can track your portfolio growth in real time, anytime. And you'll see transparent pricing on every coin and bar, This puts you in complete control of your money. The platform is free to sign up for. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com and open your account and see this new investing platform for yourself. Gold hedges against inflation and against a volatile stock market. A true diversified portfolio isn't just more stocks and bonds, but different asset classes. And this new platform allows you to make investments in gold and silver, no matter how small or large, with a few clicks. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com to get started. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com. Or call 866-649-0304. That number again, 866-649-0304, and start investing today.
I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Todd Starnes, 844-747-8868 is my number. Just going through some news. But I want to remind you that now more than ever, it is important to support companies and organizations that share your values. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless carrier. And they not only share your beliefs, but they actually do something about it. Patriot Mobile donates a portion of every dollar to organizations that fight for causes you care about. Switch to Patriot Mobile now and use the promo code Todd to get free activation and a free gift. Patriot Mobile has the broadest nationwide coverage and uses the same towers other carriers use. They have plans to fit any budget, along with great discounts for our veterans and first responder heroes, as well as multi-line users. Switching to Patriot Mobile, super easy. Just go to patriotmobile.com/Todd or call their U.S.-based customer service team at 972-PATRIOT. Get your special discount and free premier activation by using promo code Todd. For more details, visit patriotmobile.com/Todd. That's patriotmobile.com/Todd or call 972-PATRIOT. That's 972-PATRIOT. So do you remember the protests they had outside of Amy Coney Barrett, Justice Barrett, and Justice Kavanaugh's homes once when the Roe v. Wade opinion was leaked, which, by the way, they just don't know who did it. We have no idea who leaked it. No clue. Mm-hmm. Anybody buying that still? Anybody? Because I'm not. And remember that nobody was ever arrested. And the law clearly states that even the Washington Post admitted that the protests were likely illegal. The Washington Post wrote, while protest is indeed ingrained in American democracy, legally speaking, the comparison between protesting a politician at home and a member of the judiciary at home is inexact. Experts say the latter category of protest is probably illegal, regardless of how peaceful the demonstrations are. Well, according to documents obtained by Alabama Republican Senator Katie Britt, Attorney General Merrick Garland, ordered U.S. Marshals not to arrest the protesters, telling them it should not be a priority. Earlier, he had told senators that the prosecutors couldn't bring the cases unless the marshals made arrests. And he said the marshals on the scene said, well, there was no reason. That was their decision. Remember that? Well, you know, that's their decision. I'm like, really? I kind of thought you were over them. But no, the marshals, we let them decide. Well, it turns out that may really not be the whole truth. According to Congresswoman Britt, they were actively discouraged from arresting. A section of the guidance given to the marshals even said that arrests were not the goal and that arrests should be the last resort in order to prevent physical harm. The attorney general told agents in the guidelines that the law could face legal challenges and discourage them from using that as a base to make an arrest. According to Senator Britt, the guidance also told agents to coordinate with federal prosecutors before making an arrest. So that contradicts what Garland told Congress. Yet, if you had done that, you would be arrested. But because it's Merrick Garland, nothing is going to happen to him. And remember, there was a man from California who was arrested because he wanted to assassinate Kavanaugh. So, you know, these things have consequences, except the consequences only seem to apply to one side. Yeah. Coming up, a hearing with Mayorkas yesterday was fire. It's amazing. You're going to love it. John Kennedy is great. That is next on the Todd Starn Show.
Just when you thought it could not get any better, Mike Lindell with MyPillow is launching the MyPillow 2.0. When Mike invented MyPillow, it had everything you could ever want in a pillow. Now, nearly 20 years later, he discovered a new technology that makes it even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow, and now with a brand new fabric that's made with a temperature-regulating thread. The MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. And for my listeners, an exclusive. The MyPillow 2.0 is buy one, get one free with the promo code STARNS. MyPillow 2.0 temperature regulating technology is 100% made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com/Starns. That's MyPillow.com/Starns for the buy one, get one free offer and enter the promo code STARNS.
If you're just joining us, welcome to the Todd Starn Show. I'm Mary Walter. In for Todd Starnes today, 844-747-8868 is my number. So I told you there was a hearing before Congress. DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas was in front of the crew. And as soon as I heard that my absolute favorite, John Kennedy, was taking part in this, like, okay, I got to check this out. He did not disappoint at all. I want to start with cut three. This is Senator Kennedy just being Senator Kennedy, and it just went from there, and we've got Ted Cruz following up on Kennedy. This is fantastic, and keep in mind, as you listen to all of this, Town Hall reporter Rebecca Downs has just summed it up perfectly. She said, if Republicans did anything on Tuesday, it was remind us how incompetent Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas is. All right, so here he is. This is Senator Kennedy. This is how it starts.
Did you just parachute in from another planet, Mr. Secretary? Because you're the only person in the Milky Way who believes that we're not having massive, massive illegal immigration into America.
Senator, you're putting words into my mouth.
No, sir, I'm accurately describing the situation.
There is no question. There is no question that we have a very serious challenge at our southern border.
Okay.
It is a challenge.
We can agree on that.
I would watch C-SPAN. I would have C-SPAN on nonstop if everyone was as hilarious as Senator Kennedy. Absolutely hilarious. Okay. So then he gets into it with Mayorkas about an assault weapon ban. Okay. Because, you know, that's the thing we keep hearing. Assault weapons. Here is the exchange about this assault weapon ban. Kennedy, I'm telling you, he just sounds like he's so disgusted. It's fantastic.
Question as well.
Cut two.
Mr. Secretary, do you agree with the president that we should ban the private ownership of assault weapons in America?
Senator, I do.
What is an assault weapon?
It is, for example, an AK-47.
Can you give me a definition other than just pointing to a specific weapon? Would there be other weapons besides an AK-47 you would ban?
Very well are. And I remember when I was a federal prosecutor in the Central District of California from September 25th, 1989 to, I believe it was, April 2001.
And I thank you for your service, but if you could answer my question.
All of the law enforcement, the vast majority of law enforcement officers, leaders with whom I worked, were greatly in support of the assault weapons ban.
Mr. Chairman, you know why we get so frustrated with you? Because you won't give straight answers.
I think I just did.
No, you didn't. Do you have a definition of an assault weapon?
I am confident there is a technical definition of what is an assault weapon, and it was assuredly used in the context of the statute that previously existed banning assault weapons.
So what Kennedy did there, quite skillfully, and actually it's really not that hard to do, you can do it on Twitter, is get pin them down. Okay, so because they don't have a definition of what an assault weapon is, but they know they want to ban them. They want to ban them, but they don't know what they are. And that's exactly what he showed there. And Mayorkas doesn't answer questions. He's just unbelievable. So Ted Cruz gets in on the act. Now, I don't like Ted Cruz's style as much as I like Senator Kennedy's. And, this is what I wanted. I was just looking forward to bring in here. Sorry. Going back to the assault weapon thing. This is, and not knowing what they're talking about. Joe Biden yesterday was giving a speech in, where was he? He was in North Carolina. And he talked about the shooting in Nashville. And he did say that it's a family's worst nightmare. Of course it is. Absolutely. And he said that but he goes on to say, we owe these families more than our prayers. We owe them action. We have to do more to stop this gun violence that is ripping communities apart, ripping apart the soul of this nation, protect our children so that they learn how to write a check instead of duck and covering in a classroom. How they learn how to read and write instead of duck and covering in a classroom. Here, what bothers me about this is we allow the left to control the language. We always say gun violence. The right has adopted that gun violence. We never refer to anything else as slash violence. When someone hits you in the head, we don't call it brick with a brick. We don't call it brick violence. When someone's beating somebody on the street with a bat, we don't call it bat violence. When someone drives an SUV through a Christmas parade in Waukesha, we don't call it SUV violence or truck violence or vehicle violence. If someone drives drunk, we don't call it car violence or bar or alcohol violence. But yet with guns, we allow them to control the narrative because it makes it disassociates the object used to commit the violence from the person committing it. It's the gun's fault. It's the gun violence. It's not the shooter violence. No. It's the gun. We can't allow them to do that. We have got to stop saying gun violence. We have to come up with another word, whether it's shooter violence, whether it's, violence. What did he do? Just say violence like we do with everything else. Well, what happened? Oh, he shot him. What happened? He drove a car through a parade. Oh, what happened? He whacked him in the head with a bat. He stabbed him. So we have to stop allowing them to continue to do this because the term gun violence, it gives them what they want and it disassociates the actions of the person from the violence. That's just my own little editorial there. Now, and Joe Biden calls himself a Second Amendment guy, but to prove that they don't know what they're talking about, here's what he said. He said, you're not allowed to go out and own an automatic weapon. You're not allowed to own a machine gun. You're not allowed to own a flamethrower. You're not allowed to own so many other things. Why in God's name do we allow these weapons of war on our streets and in our public schools? Well, to own a machine, you can own a machine gun in the United States. I never knew that. I had no clue. To own a machine gun or a fully automatic weapon, a person must not be considered a, quote, prohibited person, must be at least 21 years old, a legal resident of the United States, eligible to purchase a firearm, pass an 8 to 10 month background check, and pay a one-time $200 transfer tax to obtain a stamp. So he's wrong. He also said that the Second Amendment banned the ownership of cannons in 1791, but that also is not true. And he goes on to say, I never thought when I started my public life that guns would be the number one killer of children in America. And you see that all over. For the first time, guns are the number one killer of children in America. You want to know why? They changed the definition. The CDC now looks at children as ages 1 through 19. But if you look at what kills children 1 through 17 even, it's car deaths, unintentional injury, with motor vehicles accounting for the majority of those deaths, followed by drownings, poisonings, suffocation, fires, transport, whatever that is, and firearms. Firearms only accounted for 120 deaths of children between the ages of 1 and 17. But when you add in 18 to 19 years old in that, it jumps up to number one, because that is the age of gangs. That is the age of running the streets. That's the age where you're going to start drug dealing and all of that. So it's really at the age of 1 and 17. So from there, from 17 up, is what juices the numbers so that they can get out there and go, that's the number one cause of death for children. I don't consider a 19-year-old a child. I don't consider an 18-year-old a child. If they are, they shouldn't be voting. But they changed the definition in order to juice the numbers. So remember that. This is the game that is being played. This is the narrative that is being formed. Okay, coming up, Ted Cruz going after Mayorkas. That's next on the Todd Starn Show. And I'm Mary Walter in for Todd Starnes on the Todd Starn Show. Coming up, right after the news, we're going to speak with Scott Couch from WZTV Fox 17 with an update on the Nashville shooting. And also, Gail Trotter will be joining us next hour to talk about the Nashville shooting, but also the January 6th video footage. And it's raising new questions about police and prosecutors and what exactly happened. Unfortunately, a lot of people have already pled guilty because they weren't given the video. They didn't have the benefit of that. So we will talk to her about that. But we have a very special unscheduled guest right now, so Ted Cruz is just going to have to wait, because this is far more important. I believe we have on the line a man named, I'm sorry, what is his name? Todd Starnes? Is that how you pronounce it? Todd Starnes?
Mary Walter, how are you doing?
But me, how are you doing?
Well, I'm doing well. This is the first time I haven't been in a drug-induced fog, so
I'm sorry.
I felt like it might be inappropriate for me to call it under the influence, because Lord knows what I might say.
Can I just say that would be awesome?
Yeah. So what's really weird, this is sort of cool, but the hospital I'm at here in the Memphis area, a lot of the staff, they listen to the show, they get the podcast, and it's been funny because they'll be walking by and they're like, wait a second.
I hear you, but I see you.
And apparently I'm a moderate fall risk. Who knew? Everybody's giving me a hard time about that.
Well, you can tell them it's just because of the drugs. I'm not as experienced as you. So there you go.
And may I say, it is a very high caliber of drugs. So God bless the Baptist. They know how to do a good hospital.
All right. Well, no one likes a show off, Todd.
Well, wait until I tell you about the Jell-O shots.
You know, can I just get a dumb question? But isn't it weird? Does anybody else think, like, why is the one place you are always guaranteed to get Jell-O, besides, it used to be grandmas, even grandmas don't do it anymore, it's the hospital. They are single-handedly keeping the Jell-O industry in business.
Yes. Yes, they are. Especially the discounted strawberry Jell-O that nobody wanted.
Really? You're not digging it?
It's in Bountiful. Well, I didn't mind it, but, you know, the diet they had me on, it was breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It was a clear broth and strawberry Jell-O, breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Interesting that they would give you strawberry Jell-O with a clear broth. Well, when do you get food?
Well, they're hoping to spring me from the joint either late tonight or probably tomorrow morning, and I just wanted to, you know, thank everybody for, you know, for their concern. You know, after the show last Thursday, I just started feeling very bad, and it turned out I had diverticulitis, which is a very painful thing. And but they also said, oh, by the way, you also have double pneumonia, which was the bigger problem.
Oh,
and I thought it was just spring allergies, Mary.
Oh my God!
I had no idea.
So it was a good thing that you went to the hospital, not because what you found was probably more dangerous than what you went there for.
Yes, and I know a lot of our readers have followed my adventures through open heart surgery and the heart valve, and you know that posed a very significant threat. So they had to, you know, I've been on antibiotics and all these things, and they've just done a wonderful job, you know, keeping me above ground, which I greatly appreciate. But for the record, and this is really funny because everybody gives me a hard time about this. Of course, they made me go, and I had to have one of those COVID tests. And once again, I am COVID-free. So I am the one person in America who apparently has never had COVID. But I almost died from getting the COVID vaccine.
Okay, so you had the blood test to find out if it was in your system?
Yeah, it's a requirement, I guess. And they took it, and you know, I did not have, you know, I didn't have it. And so anyway, I said, well, if God forbid I keel over, I went in parentheses, but at least he didn't have COVID.
Yeah.
That's on the tombstone.
Well, I have to say, you sound great. You do sound like you're in really good spirits. But from what I know of you, that just seems to be kind of your base level anyway. Like, that's kind of where you sit. You're just a happy guy, happy with life. And so if I had heard otherwise, I would worry. So hearing you now, I feel much better. I definitely feel much better.
The show sounds great, and it's been a lot of fun. So one of the guys walked by. I guess he was in, proctology or one of these things. And the guy walks by, tells my doctor. He says, hey, you know the Starnes guy? He goes, well, no, he's my patient. He goes, yeah, but do you know the guy? And he's like, well, no. He goes, well, he's a good guy, so you take care of him.
Oh.
So I'm glad the proctologist wants to make sure I'm doing
well. That's
good.
A good person to have on your side.
Yeah.
Right? You never want to anger the proctology gods.
This is true. I'll be singing the high parts on Amazing Grace.
It's exactly why you never want to anger your waiter before you get your food.
Well said. Well said. But you've done a great job filling it. The show sounds great, and I just, you know, it's so frustrating. I go 100 miles an hour every day, and then just to be in the bed. And I know Grace Baker's put out rules threatening people: do not answer Todd's calls, don't answer his emails. He has to rest.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe that going 100 miles an hour every day thing could be part of the reason why you're there.
Could possibly be. I thought balance of nature was going to carry me through, but I may need to slow it down a bit.
Yeah, you definitely should. And listen, when you come back, you know, everybody, you've got a great team in place. You don't have to rush right back behind the microphone, Todd, or maybe you could do something from home. Take it a little bit easy. Your listeners will understand. They love you. You have an amazing audience. You built an incredible audience, and they're wonderful people. So I think everyone will understand if Todd decides to, you know, just put his feet up for a little bit, rest, and then come back slowly. All right, so just think about that.
Mary, that is great advice that I probably will not follow, but it is great advice. No.
You know, you're lucky. You know, Grace one of these days is just going to take you to your home and just seal the door.
This is true. This is a very good point.
And she should. She should.
Oh,
well, thank
word.
You so much. Thank you. I really appreciate you taking the time to call in and talk, and I know the listeners appreciate it so much.
It's I just can't thank everybody enough for the kind words and comments on, you know, the social media pages. And so I've read all of them, and they're just awesome, and look forward to seeing everybody back on the radio very soon.
And now that I know you're feeling better, I can start to annoy you with texts.
Or maybe a sticky bun or two.
No, I don't think you'd. With diverticulitis, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I'm not allowed to have that.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to be eating Joe Biden food.
I was going to say, I'll send you a case of Jell-O.
Can you puree those rack of ribs, please?
All right. Take care of yourself, Todd. Great. And thank the wonderful crew there at Baptist that we really appreciate everything that they're doing for you. So thank them for us.
We'll give them Baptist Hospital of Collierville. Good people here.
All right. All right. Stay out of trouble.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Todd. So there it is. Hopefully, Todd will be back with you. Actually, no. I don't want to say I hope he's back next week, because Todd needs to take care of himself. So maybe Todd needs to just slow it down a little bit. We all understand, right? He's coming back. He'll be better than ever, if that's actually possible, when he gets back. Coming up next, Scott Couch, anchor for WZTV Fox 17 on the Nashville shooting on the Todd Starnes Show.
Live from the Liberty University Studio in Memphis, Tennessee. It's common sense conservative commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
If you're just joining us, welcome to the Todd Starnes Show. I am Mary Walter in for Todd. You can follow me on Twitter at Mary Walter Radio. And if you go to YouTube, look for Mary Walter Radio, and you can look at all the old videos of my podcasts Thursdays and Tuesdays. Tuesday's podcast is non-political. We just had Sean Spicer on yesterday. It was great. We got to talk to Sean and find out, you know, more about him, and didn't talk anything about politics. No politics on that show. Tomorrow night's show is politics, and we have guests and different people who do commentary on there as well. So 7:15 p.m. Eastern time if you want to watch live. And you can always go and watch the video anytime you want on YouTube. And also the audio will be on Apple and Spotify on the podcasts. Regarding Todd, he just called in, so if you're just joining us, he will hopefully be back soon. He is looking to get out of the hospital probably tomorrow morning, maybe tonight, but he's doing well, doing much better, and feeling great, and so hopefully he hopes he's going to be back on Monday, but maybe he'll take it a little bit easier. So, all right. Joining us now, Scott Couch, anchor for WZTV Fox 17 in Nashville. Scott, thank you for joining us. Great to talk to you.
Mary, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, want to talk about what happened with just the horrific shooting in Nashville. Are there any updates, anything new that we know, or are they really playing it close to the vest?
Well, in terms of the investigation, we still don't know the motive, exactly why. However, police are investigating the possibility that the reaction to the shooter's transition from female to male, maybe the response to that had something to do with it, but we don't have definitive proof of that yet. However, there have been a bunch of new developments. It seems like every few minutes we're learning something new. One of the things I can tell your listeners this morning is we've got some new definitive information about how the headmistress at this school, Catherine Kuntz, came out of her office, left a Zoom call to confront the shooter, and was shot down outside her office. One of the Metro councilmen here who serves that district had a connection inside the school, also law enforcement background, provided that information initially, and it was backed up by the chief of police, John Drake, saying that, by the way, her body was found in the hallway. It appears that she is another hero who stepped up to put herself in between pure evil and the children at her school. And then just a little while before, you know, we were preparing to come on, I learned from my office that the actress, Melissa Joan Hart, who I believe was, she's been in a number of things, but Sabrina the Teenage Witch was one of her national television shows, lives in the area. She and her husband were on their way for a conference at their children's school, not this school, but nearby, and were among those who helped children cross busy Hillsborough Road as they emerged from the woods, led by school personnel to escape that shooter. And it's just one thing after another. And then late last night, we learned that our own Governor Bill Lee had a personal connection to this tiny school of just a little over 200 students. The substitute teacher, Mrs. Peake, who was just there for the day, turns out she's a very close friend, a close personal friend of our First Lady in Tennessee, and was to have dinner with the governor and his wife at their home after subbing at the school that day. And the tragedy just continues to compound, and the heartbreak and all the people with personal connections to it.
It's these things impact a community for a lifetime. Absolutely. When these children, you know, they're going to be telling their children about this, and this will just go on forever. But I don't like to give the shooters, I don't even say the name, any kind of notoriety, because I just think that just perpetuates, sometimes it perpetuates, and we shouldn't be speaking about her. We should be talking about the victims, as you just did. And it's amazing how we hear these stories of heroism, or people who just step up to act and don't even think about it, right? Melissa Joan Hart, they just said, oh my gosh, we're on our way to go do something, but this is far more important, so we're going to help out. The headmaster of the school, who did put herself in the line of fire for those children. You know, I look at something like that and I'm like, man, I don't know if I could do that. And I don't think you know until you're in this situation if you're the person who can do something like that. So God bless her for trying to protect the children and putting them ahead of her. And we don't know what happened inside that school. Obviously we're not going to see those videos. I don't think we should see those videos. I don't even like them showing the video of the shooter walking through the school. It gives a visual to it. I don't know. I don't like it. We're hearing reports on Twitter of the Pittsburgh area for schools getting what they're now calling hoax active shooter calls, impacting four schools, two of them being Catholic schools. Have you heard anything of any reports about that or in Pittsburgh or elsewhere?
Not Pittsburgh. However, because this was a private Christian school, one of the questions that certainly has come up, was this school targeted because that it's a faith-based school? In fact, yesterday, one of our two U.S. senators, Bill Hagerty, was in a subcommittee hearing that included justice, and U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland happened to be among those who was before the subcommittee answering questions, and Senator Hagerty, not in a nasty way, but pointedly asked him, please tell me what you and your people are doing to help with this investigation in our hometown. And one of the things that Merrick Garland committed to doing was determining whether this was in fact a hate crime, and it could be determined or considered a hate crime if the school was targeted because of its obvious Christian beliefs and the people there and the stand that they take, and additionally whether political views might have been the target or the reason that that school was targeted. And the Attorney General assured our U.S. Senator Bill Hagerty that my people will be looking into that, and that they are working with the Metro Police Department, working through the manifesto, going through the shooter's social media, looking for statements or things that might indicate a certain bend, if you would.
Now, this Trans Day of Vengeance in Washington, D.C. that's scheduled for Saturday, they say they are going to go forward with this. Are there any rumblings? Because you look at Twitter, and this is why I'm asking you and not looking at Twitter for knowledge, is there will be Trans Days of Vengeance in smaller numbers in other cities around the country. That seems to be the rumbling. Don't know if that's true or not, and so I'm asking you, have you heard of anything that in this area?
I have not heard about anything like that in Nashville. Of course, Pride Day is celebrated here, but nothing in relation to that and this particular event.
Well, that's good to know. Like I said, I like to, before I retweet something, I like to look it up. So before I take any of that, what they're saying on Twitter with any kind of authority, I figured I would ask you more of an authority. Scott Crouch, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate the update. Thank you for your time. Keep up the good work. And I just feel so much for the people in Nashville because, listen, you're reporting on it. You're touched by this as well. So my condolences to everyone. And thank you for doing such a great job on this.
You're welcome, Mary.
844-747-8868 if you would like to comment. 844-747-8868. I'm Mary Walter in for Todd Starnes. So just a couple of things that I want to add to this discussion that I have found with what's going around with this Trans Day of Vengeance and some other things and a little bit more news we found on the shooter that I will share with you. And Not a whole lot, just a little bit more from the chief of police, John Drake. He told CBS this morning that they believe there were going to be some other targets, including family members and one of the malls in Nashville. It did not happen. But we also know, he said, that she had targeted, and I'm sorry I'm saying she, but that's just the way it's going to be. And if I misgender horrific, horrible, evil person who should be rotting in the bowels of hell right now, get over it. It's just easier. That she had scoped out other targets, and there was one she really wanted to focus on, but there was too much of a security presence. So, since criminals are cowards, what did she do? She went to a school that she knew well and knew there was no security. That's where she went. We should learn a lesson from that. All right. I'll get your calls, and I've got more information coming up. And then right after the bottom of the hour at the news there, Gail Trotter will be joining us to shed a little more light on this, but also to talk about the January 6th prisoners and what's happening with the investigations now that video is coming out. So she's got that as well. That's still going on. Nobody talks about it, though. I'm Mary Walter. You're listening to The Todd Starnes Show. Mary Walter in for Todd Starnes, 844-747-8868. You know, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, Mike Lindell with MyPillow is now launching MyPillow 2.0. Mm-hmm. Now, when Mike invented MyPillow, it had everything you could ever want in a pillow. Now, nearly 20 years later, he discovered a new technology, and it makes it even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow. But now it has a brand new fabric that is made with a temperature regulating thread. The MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you will ever own. I am so excited about this because I love my pillow. And summer's coming, so this is definitely going to be in our home. For Todd's exclusive listeners, the MyPillow 2.0 is buy one, get one free with promo code STARNES. MyPillow 2.0 temperature regulating technology is 100% made in the USA. I love that. And it comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listeners square to get the buy one, get one free offer. Enter promo code STARNES or call 800-839-8506 to get your MyPillow 2.0s now. Let's talk a little bit more of what we've learned about the Nashville shooter. The Daily Mail is reporting that she apparently was at odds with her parents. Now, remember, she's 28 years old living in her parents' home. And I'm a big fan of if you don't like your parents' rules when you're 28 years old, you can leave. Unless my parents would have told me, my parents would have been like, sweetheart, beat feet. You can come back and visit anytime you want, but if you don't like our rules under our roof, you are more than welcome to get your own place. No one's holding you here. She had recently adopted the name Aiden, apparently, and used he, him pronouns. We know that. And her parents would not let her dress as a man in the home. Okay. Their home. But so she would wait until she left to change outfits. That's something you do in eighth grade. I had a shirt when I was in high school, and I had this shirt, and it really was not, it just was like a shimmery type material, and my mother hated it. It wasn't short. It wasn't showing bare midriff because we had you know, dress code, totally met the dress code. My mother was like, no way. So, all right. So I never wore it to school, but when my friend and I would go out to clubs, and I was, because the drinking age was 18 at the time, so when I was a senior, I could go, I would stash that shirt in my bag and I would get changed, right? I'd go into the ladies' room in the club and then get changed and come out in that shirt. Well, my mother was totally on to me, and she would then check my pocketbook before I left and, you know, find it, and eventually she sold it. so that was that. But it was her house, her rules, and my mother's like, great, you're going off to college. You could do whatever you want when you're in college, but just remember we're paying for it. And when you come home, you got to come back to our rules. A source told the Daily Mail that their parents' religion did not allow them to accept homosexuality. So she was Audrey at home. But when she left the house, she changed clothes. They did know about it. They just didn't accept it. Now, the neighbors around their home were clueless about the transition. They said she was a skater boy, tomboy type. And one neighbor said she introduced herself about a year and a half ago as Audrey. I treated her like a female. She didn't correct me. She seemed artistic, quiet, and well-mannered. Now, police are now saying that she had planned to carry out more attacks, including against her own family. The police chief, John Drake, told CBS this morning, we strongly believe there are going to be some other targets, including family members, in one of the malls here in Nashville, and it just didn't happen. So, and as I told you, that there was another target that she was interested in, because she wrote all this down and put it all out there, that she was interested in, but there was too much of a security presence. And they've talked to the parents. They searched the home. They found two more weapons, and there were some more maps pertaining to thinking about some other targets. Her classmates said that they were totally shocked. Didn't expect this at all. A lot of times people who know the shooter will go, oh, yeah, mm-hmm, weirdo, weird kid, saw it coming, right? Very angry, whatever it happens to be. But not in this case. Now, the FBI says they're not going to be treating the shooting as domestic terrorism as of right now. We don't know enough, right? Although they jumped to domestic terrorism in a lot of other shootings very, very quickly, but not for this one. They said that they will not be doing that, and I'm okay with that. But what's interesting is that LGBTQ plus groups don't want the manifesto released. They don't want that released. And I think they're afraid that it's going to stain their community. If she was going through some kind, we know she was under doctor's care for emotional issues, a pretty severe emotional issue. But I think we should know, with all of these shooters, so many of them, we find out they're being treated for some kind of mental health issue. Okay, so what are they on? Like, if there's a drug that we can pinpoint all the way through that is, you know, consistent with each one of these shooters, well, that's good information to have, right? Shouldn't we know that? But, you know, no, Big Pharma, right? Politicians are in the pocket of Big Pharma. But if she was getting something like testosterone, how much testosterone was she getting? Could that possibly have affected this? I think those are legitimate questions, not to paint an entire community as bad, but to say, okay, well, if treatment is going to involve, it could possibly, you know, bring you to the point where your body is maybe not handling testosterone, whatever the treatment happens to be, we should know that. And maybe we could pump the brakes a little bit. But my guess is that it's never released. Now, I don't necessarily think we have the right or should see every bit of this manifesto. You know, part of me says, yeah, let's figure it out ourselves. I'm a big fan of transparency. But the other part of me is like, maybe there are some things that we don't necessarily need to know. But once they go through it, I just think we should know as much as possible from this. We should know what kind of treatment she was undergoing. We have to start knowing what kind of drugs these kids are on when they snap and they do this. Clearly, the drugs aren't working. You know, I interviewed a psychiatrist last night, and she said, look, a lot of times they just get a prescription. Oh, I've diagnosed you with anxiety or depression, and they get a prescription and they walk out the door. There's no actual therapy anymore. There's no going to visit the therapist once a week to talk out your problems and discuss your progress, etc. It's just like, oh, here's the drugs, and out the door they go. If that's part of the problem, we should know. All right, coming up, Gail Trotter, author of Right in the World, will be joining us to talk about this and January 6th and what the newly released videos are showing. That's next on the Todd Starnes Show. Walter in for Todd Starnes. 844-747-8868. Okay, so we're waiting for our guest, but she's waiting to be called. So my hunch is that somebody's got a wrong number here. So let me just transcribe the correct number onto the little sheet here. Just hang on with me for this. This is the beauty of radio. You get to see what happens behind the scenes. Okay. There you go. There's the correct number. So there must have been a transcription or something, an error somewhere along the line. Oh, I sneezed just before I came on the air, and now I have a runny nose. My allergies are so bad. I can't speak for anybody else, but it's starting in vengeance. All right. So we are going to talk with her about January 6th and the video and what's going on with that, because now more of it is coming out. So we're going to do that with Gail Trotter. Oh, we got her. Gail Trotter joining us. She's an attorney, a political analyst, and commentator. She also has a new book out called Right in the World. Gail, welcome. There you are.
I'm so happy to be with you, Mary. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, I'm so glad you're here. Gail is a lot of fun. I speak from experience. You can find her on Twitter at Gail Trotter. It's G-A-Y-L-E, Trotter, like a horse, you know, trots. Not Gail's a horse. That's not what I'm saying. So G-A-Y-L-E. All right. So I was just explaining that one of the things we want to talk about, in addition to what's going on with the shooter, is the January 6th proceedings. We have a judge who's saying that Pence must testify to a January 6th grand jury. That was appealed. Federal Judge James Boasberg had rejected an effort by Pence to assert executive privilege. Is this something unusual? It seems to me when it comes to Trump and anybody in his orbit, things like attorney-client privilege get thrown out the window. Things like any kind of executive privilege get thrown out the window because, you know, extenuating circumstances. Is what Pence being ordered to testify, is that unusual?
You're exactly right, Mary. And I think that any Americans who are paying attention to this realize that there seems to be a double standard for Trump and for Republicans, especially when you're looking at D.C. And I think it starts with the initial idea that these types of things would not even be pursued against a Democrat, against a Democrat administration. And then when you get beyond that, the fact that once they tried to compel testimony, that if that were the case, the judges in those situations would run sort of interference for a Democrat administration, and we're not seeing that. You remember Eric Holder, who was Obama's attorney general, he was charged with contempt of Congress, and nothing ever came of that. So there are many places where decisions are made that benefit Democrats and Democrat administrations and that go against Republicans and especially Trump and his administration. And this is yet another example of that double standard.
Yeah. And also, wasn't Trump's attorney ordered to testify against him in the documents investigation, right?
That's exactly right. And I mean, you look at every opportunity that they have to try and thwart Trump, which started with the Crossfire Hurricane investigation before Trump was even inaugurated, and continued throughout his entire administration, culminating, I would say, in the Mueller investigation. The left is just not giving up going against Trump. And of course, in going against Trump, they're going against the Republicans and the Republican platform agenda.
So why don't the Republicans go after this? Is this a Mitch McConnell thing where, you know, good old Mitch is just, you know, with the uniparty, and until Mitch is gone, the Republicans don't fight?
Republicans are speaking up against this, and not just this particular issue or this particular episode, but I think really we're going to talk about January 6th a little bit too, but the idea that there's this double standard of justice was really shown clearly with January 6th. We have all of this kerfuffle about prosecutions of January 6th trespassers, and yet Attorney General Merrick Garland, who's Biden's attorney general, will not enforce the law against the protesters who are trying to intimidate the Supreme Court justices at their houses, because they didn't like a Supreme Court decision, the Supreme Court decision of Dobbs, the decision that sent the abortion question back to the states to decide, which is finally, you know, we found something the left has decided they don't like Democratic choice about, you know, policy decision. And so Republicans are speaking up against this, but of course it's also horse trading. And you see that there are a lot of Republicans who are thinking about, you know, who is going to be the eventual nominee for the Republican Party in 2024. And you see a lot of political horse trading on this. But all Republicans should stand up against this politicization of the Justice Department. And we're seeing it, you know, at federal level and at the state level as well. And, you know, Trump continues to get everything thrown at him, including the kitchen sink. And yet, the fact that the Democrats, any reasonable Democrat should oppose this too, because when the legal system is politicized, it will eventually come back and hurt them too. And it's a matter of principle and fairness that you shouldn't have the judiciary weaponized for political gain. But you see, the Democrats have been very successful at this, and they're going to keep trying.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we were just saying before I got on the air with you that Alabama Congress Senator Katie Britt found, according to the Washington Times, that she has documents that she obtained, and she alleges that Merrick Garland ordered U.S. Marshals not to arrest those protesters outside of the Supreme Court justices' homes. Yet he, in front of Congress, said that it was not up to him, that it was up to the local agents who were there. And we now know that that's a lie. But yet, I guarantee you, he will never be prosecuted for lying.
No, of course not. And it's absurd. He is the chief legal enforcement officer of the United States. There is a federal law against that, and he is refusing to enforce it. He knows the law. He just doesn't have the desire to enforce it even-handedly. And he's continuing to allow the intimidation of Supreme Court justices and their children who live in these houses. So it's just, I mean, it is really, really shameful. And we're so lucky that he was not actually confirmed to the Supreme Court. And anyone who gets upset about Merrick Garland being attorney general should just be very grateful that he did not obtain lifetime tenure on the Supreme Court. It just reveals he is not a moderate, and he never was.
No, absolutely. But it drives me crazy. I think it drives a lot of people crazy that he just doesn't. He's never held accountable for his actions because it's good to be a Democrat. Regarding January 6th, there's something that I do want to go into because I had actually seen this video. This video is on Twitter. Now, they say it hasn't been released, but it's on. I saw it on Twitter. And I was like, wait, I don't know. Are these really Capitol police officers? So we find out retired Capitol Police Deputy Chief. Here's the title. J.J. Pickett told John Solomon's outlet Just the News on Monday that he's not certain whether federal prosecutors have turned over to January 6th defendants compilation videos that were made by the Capitol Police Department of every person who entered the U.S. Capitol during the riot. They're called sizzle reels. So what they did is the FBI would send them a picture of some kind of an online clip of a person. And then the Capitol Police would go to that area in the Capitol building, look at the cameras, and it was like a Where's Waldo? And they would find the people in order to track their paths through the Capitol. They would follow their movement. But the important thing about this is if all they did was walk in, take some pictures, and leave, why are they sitting in pretrial detention? But does the question is, does the defense even know that these videos exist? And if not, is that a Brady violation?
That is a serious problem that one of Biden's nominees to the federal judiciary wouldn't be able to explain because he didn't know what a Brady
was. Yes. yes.
So, you know, anybody with half a brain paying attention to these things knows more than some of Biden's nominees to the federal judiciary. But as you're saying, if this does exist and the fact that they haven't turned over material that would be helpful to the defendants is outrageous and should be pushed that they would do this. But I think the key point here is that the left would love to let people off death row for all sorts of technical violations,
yes,
but they want every January 6th defendant strung up, even if they just put their little toe in the Capitol, even if the police escorted them in. And as you know, Tucker had all of those videos showing how the so-called shaman of January 6th was basically taken on a tour around the Capitol building. And I think this just underscores the point that all of these videos make the mainstream media and the loony left crazy because no one can watch these videos and seriously can seriously claim that January 6th was an insurrection. That is a lie, and that is the mainstream media's favorite term for what happened on January 6th. And
yeah,
they want to perpetuate this lie, but these videos and continue to irrefutably prove that what happened on January 6th was not an insurrection.
Now, there is other video, and this is what I saw on Twitter. We found out that in the case of William Pope, he's a January 6th defendant, federal prosecutors divulged that there is a police body cam footage that they don't want to make public. And it shows D.C. Metro police officers in plain clothes consorting with protesters and yelling, go, 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 as they're trying to get into the Capitol. In a brief that was filed late Friday by the U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington, D.C., prosecutors wrote, the specific footage, GoPro video, recorded by a Metro Police Department police officer who was stationed at the Capitol in an evidence-gathering capacity, captures the officer shouting words to the effect of, go, 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 and keep going, keep going. Now, I watched this. This is on Twitter. And I said, and it was being alleged that these were Metro Police, MPD. And I was like, well, how do you know that? And I questioned it. So I didn't retweet it. I didn't forward it. I went nothing with it. I don't know about this. Well, it turns out that's exactly what it was. And there are pictures. These guys get up to the Capitol. They go in order. Like they in a line and they hold the shoulder of the guy in front of them to get through the crowd. They get up to the Capitol. And there's a guy scaling it, and they're pushing him up. They're going, get up there, go, go. They're shouting, drain the swamp, USA. And when someone's going, whose house? They're yelling, our house. So, like, they're part of the whole thing. But they basically are pushing people to break the law. I'm not quite sure how that hasn't been seen, and we don't know about this.
Well, it's an effort to completely smother any evidence or video or anything else that creates a different narrative than the one that the mainstream media and the loony left continue to perpetuate, which is that January 6th was an insurrection. And obviously, if it's very good that you're wary, obviously, anything you see on Twitter, and particularly now that we have all these deep fakes, you have to really go to the source. But once it's acknowledged in a courtroom that it's valid, accurate representation of events that happened on that day, and you see officers, plainclothes officers, so they're concealing who they are and trying to get people to do more than maybe they were willing to do or thought about. That's why we don't like mobs, because people get taken away with mobs and they do stuff right that they wouldn't do if they were individuals. So that's something, why we have peaceful assembly is protected by the Constitution, not mobs and not riots. But when you think about this, the fact that this goes against the narrative is something that the mainstream media wants to suppress. So that's why you're not going to see it on CNN. That's why you're not going to see it on MSNBC. Or if you do see it, there will be some explanation of why it's all a right-wing conspiracy eventually anyway.
Yeah, well, they didn't want the tape released, but I'm telling them, I don't know whether they know this or not, but it's on Twitter. It may have been taken down since then. Everything's on Twitter. Very quickly, the manifesto, I've got 2 minutes here, the manifesto from the Nashville shooter. The LGBTQ plus community does not want it released, and I'm sure it's because they don't want, it's to be seen as maybe she was on testosterone and whatever. Should that be made public, or is that something that we don't make public and we just get the information we need?
I think Laura Ingraham would argue that anything that would help us to deter these types of things in the future should be made public so that the public can understand them and obviously take steps to avoid them. I would play devil's advocate and say maybe we shouldn't publish manifestos by people who do things in order to get attention. And maybe we shouldn't give so much attention to these shooters, but, black hole their names, black hole what they're trying to do. And obviously you want to prevent it. But the way we can prevent it is take these soft targets and harden them up. So releasing the manifesto is not going to do anything other than give this person more attention, which apparently is part of the motivation of some of these shooters and violent criminals. And instead, just do the obvious thing and protect schools like we protect banks, we protect the Supreme Court, we protect things that we care about. And what is more precious than our children and the future generation of this country.
You know, I keep making that point on Twitter, which again is a cesspool. So you get the feedback you pretty much expect. And I see you want our schools to be armored gulags. I'm like, yeah, because that's pretty much what I said right there. Yeah, that's exactly where I went. Good for you for paying such attention. And I don't understand why they don't want to, because I keep saying, hey, your money's protected by an armed guard. Congress is protected by armed guards. Why is it good enough for that but not good enough for your kids? And they don't like that argument. As far as the manifesto goes, I'd like to know. I think we should know if she, you know, because a lot of these shooters have been in some kind of mental treatment, and I think we need to know why and what kind of drugs they're getting, if any. I think that's important to know, but I don't know if we'll ever know that. We got to run. Gail Trotter, thank you so much for joining me. You're the best.
Great to be with you, Mary. Thanks so much. Great topics.
Thank you. And check out her website, gailtrotter.com, G-A-Y-L-E, and her book, Right in the World. It's a good read. And on Twitter, Gail Trotter. Your call is coming up next on The Todd Starnes Show. All right, coming up on the Todd Starnes Show, I'm going to get back to the hearing with us, DHS Secretary Mayorkas and Ted Cruz. We'll hear what he has to say because it's great. And they really hammered this guy. And they should. And I believe, someone filed articles of impeachment for Mayorkas after the hearing yesterday. I'll check that out. Also, some news about Fetterman. We got that we're going to discuss. And, you know, the Wall Street Journal has a really great piece on America pulling back on the values that once defined us as a nation. And I want to talk to you about that. Why do you think we're pulling back? And I'll tell you what the areas are and why you think that's happening. Why is that happening? How did we get here? All right. 844-747-8868. And also, why are there more shootings now than when we were kids? What changed? I wonder if these two things go hand in hand. Because I think they kind of do. You tell me, coming up on The Todd Starnes Show.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's it.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
I am Mary Walter in for Todd Starnes, 844-747-8865, 8865. Now, as I don't know if you've heard, but during Thursday's show, Todd started feeling not so great. And it turned out he was suffering from a serious illness and it required hospitalization, not related to his heart condition, though. And he is getting treatment. Doctors say he's on his way to a full recovery, could be back as soon as next week. He's still at the hospital. He does appreciate your prayers. And if you missed it, he called into the show. He sounds fantastic. He sounds just like, you know, the old Todd, you know, regular Todd, you know, and love. And he says he'll probably be out. He's hoping for tonight, but probably tomorrow morning. So he'll be back on the air. He says next week. I don't know. I think Grace, myself, Kyle, everybody here is like, maybe you should take a couple days off just to, you know, fully recuperate before you come charging back to work. So I told, you know, you guys, we all love Todd, and we are more than happy to wait for him, but I think we all want him to, we'll miss him on the air, but want him to get better, and that is of the utmost importance. So, just a little update for you in case you missed him on the air. So, Ted Cruz slammed DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. They had a hearing yesterday over what's happening or not happening at the southern border. So I am going to let Ted Cruz, you can hear and listen. We're going to play them in order. So now we earlier played Senator John Kennedy, who is hilarious, and I adore this man. I want to have a beer with him. He's so funny. He does it, but very cutting, but he's very funny when he does it. Ted Cruz is just angry. So Ted Cruz is just yelling, but everything he points out is fantastic. All right, so let's start with cut four, and we'll just take him in order. Here's the beginning of Ted Cruz going after Mayorkas.
Question as well. Let's move on. It's obvious you've been instructed to stonewall, so I'm not going to let you. You don't get to stonewall and filibuster. Now, one of my Democratic colleagues before said the Democrat talking point, quote, this problem didn't start under Biden. I get if you're a partisan spinner, you got to figure out something to say about the absolute catastrophe that has played out under the Biden administration. True or false, Secretary Mayorkas, 2020 was the lowest rate of illegal immigration in 45 years. Is that true or false?
It is certainly the lowest level of immigration in many, many years. And what was it in 2020? What was it, Senator, in 2020 that impacted the entire world, including the United States?
Okay, so your testimony is the reason we had the lowest rate was COVID. It had nothing to do with building the wall, nothing to do with any catch and release, nothing to do with remain in Mexico. With all respect, Mr. Secretary, that answer is laughable. And in fact, if you look at illegal immigration, let's look at CBP encounters. You can see 500,000, it drops to the lowest level, and boom, what happens? You show up, and that red line is you. That red line is Joe Biden. And you're claiming nothing happened. Oh, gosh, this was here before us. No, you made the decision to allow this to happen. Let me ask you, we now have over 5.5 million people who've entered this country illegally under Joe Biden. How many murderers have you released into America?
Senator, I'm not aware of any murderer whom we've...
So you don't know.
Senator, let me say something. If you take a look at...
No, you don't get to give a speech. Do you know how many murderers you've released?
I'm just trying to answer your question.
How many rapists have you released?
Senator, I'm trying to answer your question.
You can answer, I know or I don't know.
Senator, any individual who poses a public safety threat...
How many child molesters have you released?
...and removed from the United States.
Oh, so your testimony under oath, subject to perjury, is that you have not released any murderers, rapists, or child molesters among the 5.5 million? Is that your testimony?
Mr. Chairman, may I have the opportunity
to... No, you may not. You may answer my question.
You're not allowing...
Is that your testimony, yes or no?
Senator, you're not allowing me to answer your question.
I am allowing you to answer. I'm not allowing you to filibuster.
If you take a look at the pace of immigration in 2018 to 2019...
You're refusing to answer. Let's move on.
Yeah, and of course he's not going to answer, right? He's not going to give yes or no because he knows that he can't answer that. So what he was talking about there with the chart, and he said, look, here's the level at, and then what happened in 2020? You happened in 2020, and it's a chart of the encounters on the border, right? And you could see where they go up and down, and it's down low because Trump has just left, and then it goes almost straight up from when Mayorkas comes in. And that's what he was saying there, that that you're the one that happened there. You're the one who's making this happen. And listen, Mayorkas is not going to admit to any of this. He's doing, I firmly believe, and you can disagree, but I firmly believe that Mayorkas is doing exactly what the administration has told him to do. This is an administration policy of an open border to get as many illegals into this country as humanly possible. Two reasons. They think they're going to become Democrat voters in the future, but more importantly, they've managed to get everyone counted in the census, not just citizens. So by getting everyone counted in the census, right? Then they get more representation because they know that they're going to be in more liberal areas where they offer them a whole bunch of freebies. Sanctuary cities, where are those? Liberal areas. So the more illegals they have in their district, the more power they get, the more seats they get in Congress. Because a lot of these areas, California, New York, Illinois, these places are losing seats as there is out-migration from their states. So if they can replace that out-migration of citizens with bodies, literally just bodies, that will be counted in the census, they can maintain their representation and maybe gain representation because of the increase in the population. They're smart. never say that the left is dumb. They are very, very smart. Okay, continue. Let's go to cut five.
Mr. Mayorkas, has the crisis made aliens less safe? Yes or no?
Senator, we are seeking...
So you won't answer that question either. It's a yes or no. Has it made aliens less safe?
Senator, smugglers...
Mr. Mayorkas, has the crisis made aliens less safe? Yes or no?
Senator, we are seeking...
So you won't answer that question either. It's a yes or no. Has it made aliens less safe?
Senator, smugglers are exploiting...
Has the crisis made aliens, yes, less safe? Are you willing to answer it?
Senator, the smuggling organizations...
Okay, you're filibustering again. Let me ask you this question. How many migrants have died under President Biden?
Senator, your phrasing of the question is actually quite misleading.
How many migrants died in 2022?
Approaching our southern border?
Yes.
Precisely why we are seeking to exclude the smuggling.
Do you know the answer? Do you know how many died?
I do not.
You do not. Of course you don't. I know how many died. 853.
That is
853. And by the way, here are the numbers that have died every year. You go back to 1998, you see it's consistently between 300 and 400, 300, 400, 300, 400. Suddenly, 2021, what happens? You get in office, and that red line are dead bodies. I've been on the Rio Grande, and I've seen dead bodies floating there who've drowned because of your refusal to do your job. You don't even know how many have died. What do you say to the Texas farmers and ranchers who find pregnant ladies dead on their property, who find toddlers dead on their property? What do you say to them?
I say that is why precisely we are taking it to the smuggling organizations.
But you are not. That is simply not true.
Number two,
let me read from the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal 2 weeks ago ran an article entitled, "It's Like a Graveyard. Record numbers of migrants are dying at the border." The story begins with this chilling line, quote, Eagle Pass, Texas. Local officials keep a refrigerated truck to hold the bodies of migrants who drown in the currents of the Rio Grande while trying to cross the border into the U.S. Mr. Chairman, I ask unanimous consent that this article be entered into the record.
In for Todd Starnes. Hello. So Ted Cruz hammering a DHS Secretary Mayorkas. You heard him there. He doesn't even know how many migrants died under his watch, which is ridiculous. That's insane. But he does know. He just doesn't want to answer the questions. But it happens with so many positions in this administration. They don't do their jobs. They don't know how to do their jobs. Look at Pete Buttigieg, head of transportation. What has he done to qualify him for that job? Literally nothing. You know what he does? He checks a box. He's gay. And he checks a box so he gets the job. This is what happens when you hire people based on immutable characteristics, when you hire them based on DEI instead of qualifications, on equity instead of merit. You wind up with people like Kamala Harris, who's the border czar, who's never been to the border. Can you imagine being put in charge of something at your company? Like you're put in charge of the production of this car, yet you never visit the production line ever. Never drove the car ever for 2 years. Zero, nothing to show for your job. Of course you would be fired, and rightfully so. Mayorkas has done nothing to follow the laws. He's actually thwarting the laws of this country. Republicans have allowed him to do it for 2 years. It has to stop. But they're smart. It's about the census. You know, Buttigieg went on paternity leave. That's fine. Go on paternity leave. But if you have a job where you're in charge of like crises and handling crises, then sometimes maybe you got to come back from paternity leave and handle the crises like we were having with shipping at our ports, what we were having with the baby formula crisis. But I'm sure his baby had formula. You know, when there's no food on the shelves, I get that you're on paternity leave and I don't begrudge you that. But people can't feed their children, so you might want to do your job. Sometimes that happens when you're considered essential personnel. In radio, we're essential personnel. you know, depending on where you work, you get to go drive through the bad weather in order to go to work to tell everybody else not to drive through the bad weather. My husband is a critical care physician, right? So he was the one working during COVID, but he had to, you know, go to work and, you know, put on whatever, you know, the protective equipment that he could to tell everybody else to don't go near people. That's part of your job. But Pete Buttigieg failed phenomenally. But yet he'll probably be running for president because he's done such a great job. Same thing with Mayorkas. Same thing with Mayorkas. Let's go to the last Ted Cruz cut with Mayorkas, of him going off on him. One of the things I don't like about Ted Cruz's style is he just doesn't let him finish his sentence. It's yes or no, yes or no. You can't answer questions yes or no because he doesn't want to answer the question. So he's got to try to, you know, say yes, but. And you've been in situations like that where you're like, yes, but here's why. But they don't want to hear the weird here's why. They just want you on record saying yes. So it's a tough position for him to be in. And after a while, I kind of wish Ted Cruz would stop yelling. Thank goodness it was only 5 minutes of yelling. All right, here's the end of it.
A photograph from just one day along the Rio Grande of hundreds of thousands of people walking across the border. You have allowed this to happen. The photograph that was before. What are these wristbands?
I don't know what they are.
You don't know what they are. Mr. Secretary, you have just testified to the American people you're incompetent at your job because I've been to the southern border. And if you go to the southern border, along the southern border, you see thousands of these wristbands because the illegal immigrants wear them. The drug cartels, every color corresponds to how many thousands of dollars they owe the cartels. You have turned these cartels into multi-billion dollar criminal organizations. And these are modern day leg irons because these are children being sold into sex slavery, and you don't even know what they are. That is astonishing. Mr. Secretary, how many children have been sold into sex slavery under your administration?
Senator, we are taking it to the cartels.
How many children have been sold into sex slavery? Do you know how many children have been sold into sex slavery?
To an unprecedented degree.
Mr. Secretary, I want to say to you right now,
it is precisely
your behavior is disgraceful, and the deaths, the children assaulted, the children raped, they are at your feet, and if you had integrity, you would resign. And I will tell you, the men and women of the Border Patrol, they've never had a political leader undermine them. They despise you, Mr. Secretary, because you're willing to let children be raped to follow political orders. This is a crisis. It's a disgrace. And you won't even admit this human tragedy is a crisis.
Claiming 1 minute chairman time, Mr. Secretary, would you like to respond to any of those questions?
What the senator said was revolting. I'm not going to address it.
Your refusal to do your job is revolting.
I loved that there. I love that last bit there. Your refusal to do your job is revolting. It is. It's disgusting. But, you know, Mayorkas kept wanting to say, well, we're going after the cartels. We're taking it to the cartels. If you close the border, the cartels wouldn't have a business. It's a very simple thing to do. You have the keys to the store and you've left the door open. So you want to go to the robbers and you want to say to the pillagers and go, hey, could you really stop doing this? We're going to go after them. We're going to go on their territory. We're going to talk to them. All you have to do is close and lock the door to the store and they're not going to be able to get in. And you guard it. They want to break down the windows. You're there and you guard your store. But Mayorkas isn't doing that. So he wants to say, oh, well, we're taking it to them. You're not. You know, I think that it's great that Ted Cruz said, what do you say to the ranchers and the farmers, these people who are American citizens whose lives are being ruined as these people try to break into their homes? I've seen the video of that, trying to break into their homes. And they want to steal clothing. They steal cars. Anything they can get their hands on. You can't let your kids play outside for fear of these people walking across your property. You don't know who they are. Are they women and children, or are they criminals? Are they child abusers? Are they murderers? You don't know. Imagine living in that atmosphere. But they don't care about them. But what's interesting is all of this not caring is turning a lot of those border areas that have voted Democrat in the past into Republican voters. You're starting to see it more and more. You're starting to see it more and more along the border, these mayors and representatives, members of Congress, who are now speaking up and saying, no, you know, my constituents have had enough. but yet nothing is changing. So they're not speaking up loudly enough. I want to see Mayorkas impeached. I think Mayorkas should be impeached. Doug from Georgia, hang on. I will get you coming up because I just don't have enough time to get to you here. So hang on, Doug, and I will get you on the other side to continue the discussion about Mayorkas. And then I want to talk about American values as well and how I think it plays in with the whole gun discussion that is being had. All of that coming up on Mary Walter in for Todd Starnes. Walter in for Todd Starnes. You can follow me on Twitter at Mary Walter Radio. And I do have a podcast. It's on YouTube and Getter Live. Also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify Audio. You can download the audio. The political podcast is Mary Walter Radio. The non-political podcast is Life with Mary Walter. And if you go to YouTube, just look for Mary Walter Radio or Life with Mary Walter. Put in Mary Walter and it'll come up. And last night's podcast was with Sean Spicer. And it was a segment that I did on political people talking about everything but politics. It was really cute. A lot of fun. Todd's a Todd. Oh, gosh. I got to have Todd on. Sean's a great guy. And it was a lot of fun. So I highly recommend you go check it out. Follow me. Like it. I would appreciate that. All right. 844-747-8868. We're just talking about Ted Cruz and the hearing of Alexandra Mayorkas, the DHS Secretary, Mayorkas, in front of Congress. And they're asking him about what's happening on the border. And I would love to see them impeach him because he's not doing his job and he's hurting this country. And a lot of people are dying because of him not doing his job. Doug in Georgia listening on WDUN. Doug, you're on the Todd Starnes Show. Hi.
Hello, Mary. Boy, what a pleasure to hear such an articulate, wonderful woman. Is that sexist? Well, anyway, I think you sound great.
I'll take it. Thank you.
Well, you know what? Let's celebrate the differences in the genders for crying out loud, because I like the differences. But that isn't why I called. So here's the problem. When people ask closed-end questions, yes or no, well, they're asking for a short response. What you want to do is ask people open-end questions. Why, who, what, where a person has to give an explanation. Well, obviously, Cruz couldn't ask those of Mayorkas because Mayorkas was going to give a long-winded, deflective answer.
Right.
So if Ted's tied into these closed-end questions, he has to use it against Mayorkas. What he should have said was, tell me about all the great things you've done. And giving him about 30 seconds, he goes, so what you're telling me, yes or no, that you've really done a great job, or you've done this, or that you're trying as hard as you can, yes or no? The guy would go, yes, that you've done this, that the administration is behind helping and doing the very best. Yes, yes, yes. At that point, Cruz, nice pregnant pause, and then goes, so what you're telling me is that what we're seeing right now, these results, is the best you can do. Fail. Boom. See you, Mayorkas. You've just told us that you are incompetent in your own words. So, you know, I don't know why our politicians on the right can't get it. It always seems like we're on our heels fighting back instead of laughing at these people and going, you are a joke, you know? You are a joke. You have failed. The numbers have showed you failed. I don't care what you say, Mayorkas. You're a failure. Goodbye. Click, hang up the phone, mic drop, whatever you want to do. But let's fight back, for crying out loud, conservatives, and quit acting like we're on the defensive. We're the winners. We're winning. So take care. I'll look forward to hearing more of your dulcet tone.
Well, thank you so much, Doug, and I do appreciate the compliment. Thank you. Yeah, and I wonder if Doug's a lawyer, because that's a great way to do it. But he's absolutely right, because they're just going to filibuster. They're not going to answer the question. And Ted Cruz, I think for a lot of these Congress men and women, is that they just want to get the point out there so that the American people see it. Because especially Republicans know that the mainstream media, it carries the water for the Democrats. You know, they are the publicity arm for the Democrat Party. And so they they're not going to put the truth out there. The Republican side will never get out there, and they know that. And so I think they try their best to do that. One of the things I want to get to very quickly here as we run out of time. I need another hour. Can I have another hour, please, Grace? May I have the hour from the next show? I would appreciate that. The Wall Street Journal has an interesting story out today. Excuse me, yesterday. And it's headlined that America pulls back from values that once defined it. And it's a Wall Street Journal NORC poll, N-O-R-C poll, from the University of Chicago. And it's a nonpartisan research organization. And they found that the priorities that have helped define our national character for generation have dropped off precipitously in importance in this country. Things like patriotism, religious faith, having children. And they've dropped off sharply and divided by political party. And 38% of the respondents said patriotism was very important to them. 38%. 39% said religion was very important. When they first asked the question in 1998, 70% of respondents said that patriotism was very important. So between 1998 and now, it's dropped from 70% to 38%. Religion being important. Back in 1998, 62% of respondents said, yes, religion is very important. It is now down to 39%. The share of Americans who say that having children is important and community involvement and hard work also fall in tolerance. Was very important in 4 years ago. 80% of Americans said tolerant was very important. It's now only 58%. I don't have to be tolerant of your opinion, and you see that. If you don't agree with my opinion, I'm going to force it on you. You know, this National Day of Vengeance that's coming up from the transgender community. And I've explained to these idiots on Twitter that I can be tolerant of what you're saying, but that doesn't mean that I have to, A, accept it. I don't have to accept it. And I certainly don't have to say the words you want me to say. I don't have to change my speech and my behavior to accommodate your beliefs. You're allowed to have them. I'm not going to shout you down. You can say what you want to say. That's fine with me. You want to put on a hula skirt and a coconut bra and sashay your way through Times Square telling everybody you're a lady. Go for it. I don't care. But you can't force me to call you ma'am. You can't force me to pretend that, yes, honey, you're a lady. Yes, you are. You can't do that. Maybe it's rude. I don't care if you think it's rude. I don't care if you think it's disrespectful. Oh, well, welcome to life. Why do you think this is? The only priority that has grown in importance in the past quarter century, which was cited as very important by 43% by everyone, the only priority importance of the past, money was the only thing that was cited as very important. So we're becoming more materialistic. You know, happiness comes from money. So I don't think that's a good trend. 844-747-8868. 844-747-8868. Here's how it breaks down. Patriotism was far more important to the older generation, okay? Having children was important. Only 9 points of the people in the age group of 18 to 29 thought that that was important. Religion important to the 30 to like 55 age group. Hard work, 60 to 75 age group. Older people think hard work is important. Only 23% of adults under the age of 30 said that having children was important. How did this happen? Where did we go wrong? And this is such a huge shift in such a small amount of time. How did it happen? What do you think? 844-747-8868. We don't value hard work. We don't value having children. We don't value patriotism. We don't value religion. We don't value community anymore. But what we do value is money. Tolerance we don't value. Things that used to define us as a nation. And can we come back from this? I don't know how we do it. I just hope that the generation, the next generation, rebels and decides to embrace all those things because their parents don't. All right. So why do you think it is that... The Wall Street Journal, in a poll that they've been asking since 1998, found that patriotism, having children, the value of religion, the value of hard work, community involvement have all declined precipitously, very quickly in this country in one generation. And the only thing is the value of money. That's the only thing that the value of had that we value more in a generation than we did before. 844-747-8868 is the number. Now, Bill McInturf is a pollster who worked on the previous survey that measured the attitudes with NBC News. So he used a different company. And he said that the differences are so dramatic that it paints a new and surprising portrait of a changing America. He blames that perhaps the toll of our political division, COVID, the lowest economic confidence in decades, is having a startling effect on our core values. Money, the only thing that has gone up. Aside from money, all age groups, including seniors, attached far less important to those priorities and values than when pollsters asked about them in 1998 and again in 2019. Younger Americans, though, in particular, place a low importance of values. As I said, 23% of adults under the age of 30 said the patriotism was important to them personally, compared with 59% of seniors ages 65 or older. 31% of younger respondents said religion is important to them, compared with 55% among seniors. I also am a big believer that you kind of like move away from religion, and then I think you come back as you get closer to death. I think that happens. You know, you kind of get there and you're like, you start to look at where your life is. You do an assessment at some point in time, call it midlife crisis, call it whatever you want. And I think you reshuffle your values. I think there's a reckoning and a reshuffling. And I think maybe that's why it becomes more important. Only 23% of adults under the age of 30 said having children was important. Some see this, that one guy that they spoke with, he's 33 years old, said he thought that patriotism is declining as a civic value, and it goes hand in hand with the rise of individualism and a sense of entitlement among a lot of young people, and a decline in community involvement, because people are focusing on their own issues, their own things, their own racial background, their own cultural background, as opposed to what we as Americans have in common. And he coaches youth sports. He volunteers with a group that provides security at protests and rallies. And he said, I think patriotism encompasses being part of your community and helping other Americans. And I got to tell you, that is something that I definitely see. I definitely see a lack of volunteerism. It's amazing. When I was younger, I at the age where I would be running around with kids, because I don't have children, but I'd be running around with kids. Man, I volunteered for everything. And I also noticed that seniors did a lot of volunteering. Seniors don't do volunteering anymore, because now seniors are there. They're all over the place. They're always involved with their grandchildren. They're enmeshed with their grandchildren. My grandparents were not as enmeshed with us as I see other grandparents being enmeshed in their kids' lives. So it's really super interesting piece in the Wall Street Journal. If you want to look it up, it's called America Pulls Back from Values That Once Defined It. And it's interesting. It's going to be really, I think personally, being because I'm old, where this country goes. You know, they speak to one woman who's a former Pentecostal minister, lives in southwestern Pennsylvania in coal country. She said, patriotism has taken on a political sheen. It's no longer important to her. For me, patriotism has turned into right-wing nationalism. She's a Biden voter. She said, back in the day, Democrats and Republicans had a sense of deference to one another. They didn't act like they were in a schoolyard trying to be vengeful and reactive. She's a self-help author and a jewelry designer. When they asked a woman in Brookhaven, New York, 43 years old, she said, you need economic opportunity. No matter your starting point, you can always become successful. And very quickly, before we move on to our last story here, I just want to say, it's here. Here it is, broken down by a political affiliation. So patriotism, 59% of Republicans said patriotism was something that a value that was very important to them. 29% of independents, 23% of Democrats. Religion, more important to Republicans than independents and then Democrats. Having children, more important to Republicans. Shockingly, number two, Democrats, number three, is independents. Community involvement, Democrats, number one, 32%, and then Republicans. I thought Republicans would be more involved in community. Surprised. Money, though, important to both Republicans and Democrats, 45%, but only 36% of independents saying that that's important. I think money is important when you're younger. I think when you get older, you look at your life, you look at the decisions you've made, and you're like, okay, this is where I am. I may have to work longer. I may have to do something. But I think you kind of realize there's a lot of things happen in your life that are far more important than that. Now, this last story, I have to, and I think Kyle is going to be joining me here. Are you ready for this, Kyle?
Unfortunately.
Oh, come on. You didn't have to do this. You didn't have to do this. Oh, Grace is on the line and can join in too.
Grace
apparently.
Is here as well. This is, I mean, we're helping you out with this one.
All right, Grace, are you ready for this?
Yeah, I guess so, guys.
Okay. There is a man named Jonathan Jacob Meyer. He's 41 years old. He is a Dutch musician, and he is a prolific sperm donor. It is estimated that he has fathered about 550 children around the world. He is being sued. Why is he being sued? For allegedly increasing the risk of accidental incest.
Now, I would say that this isn't his fault. You know?
Go ahead, Kyle.
Whoever he's donating these to, shouldn't they be keeping track of that?
Well, no, I mean, you don't just go to a guy and say, hey, want to, you know, give me some sperm. You go to like a sperm bank where you can pick the donors and you can pick like what they, you see a picture of what they look like. You find out what their interests are. Are they artsy? Are they mechanical? Whatever it happens to be. Are they Mensa? And then you get, you know, you choose the sperm from that donor.
Exactly.
Well, Mary, his type must be very popular. You said he's a musician and I've seen a picture of him. I mean, he's kind of your average Joe looking guy, you know. But that's just, he's no Tom Cruise or anything.
Yeah. Well, he has donated sperm to at least 13 different clinics, including 11 clinics in the Netherlands. He was blacklisted there in 2017 for fathering 102 children because under Dutch guidelines, donors are not allowed to father more than 25 children or impregnate more than 12 women to prevent inbreeding, incest, or psychological problems for kids who find out, you know, you got 100 siblings.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, there's got to be some sort of limit to this. I mean, I guess, I'm sorry, there is some money in that industry, right? Like when he donates. I guess
yes,
his music
yes.
isn't so well, yeah. and he just kept going back for more money. But he needs to find another job. That's just my two cents.
Yeah, so clearly he lied when he went. You know, he knew what he was doing by going to 13 different clinics because he knew there was a limit as to how many times you can donate. He lives in Kenya now. And he continues to donate his sperm outside of the Netherlands, including Denmark and Ukraine. The Dutch Donor Foundation, Dutch Donorkind Foundation, has filed a civil lawsuit against him. They allege that he has lied about the number of children he has fathered. So they're taking action against him because the government is doing nothing. He has a global reach via the internet, and he does business with large international sperm banks. The suit was brought by a Dutch woman who gave birth to one of his kids in 2018. And she said, if I had known he had already fathered more than 100 children, I never would have chosen him. So...
Yeah. That's something.
All the reasons
I have
to go into hiring.
So be careful, kids. Thank you, Todd. Todd will be back with you. Thank you, Grace. Thanks, Kyle. Thanks, Dylan.